Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in the show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. I think you will. Everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. Hope is here.
Hello.
And joining us for our series discussion of the both the television series from 1998 and the 10 years later film, we're talking about Trigun this week. And joining us for that, returning champion, you can find his work at goldenannie.blogspot.com. It's Jeff Tebbets. Jeff, thanks for coming on the show.
All right, guys, I want a good, clean fight. No hitting below the belt, touch gloves, go to your corners, and let's start.
I think we'll be fine. I think this will be fine.
Civilly disagree heavily, yeah.
Yeah, it's all in good fun, everybody. Like, everything's going to be fine. So we did a poll. The poll was like a real close shave between Code Geass and Trigun. Trigun ultimately won the day out, and I was happy about that because I'd been looking for a chance to revisit this show. Because I had not seen Hide Your Hair of It since the 90s. And it had been a long time. So I was excited to watch this thing again. Hope obviously has a history with the show that I'm sure plenty of people listening to this are familiar with. But as we always start these things out, I'm curious how you discovered the show, how you came to it, and what your first experience with it was. And Jeff, why don't we start with you on this?
Okay, I would probably say that more of my experience actually came from sort of the convention circuits. Back in 2000, I'd worked in Japan for a few years, and I still was following anime, but at the time I was sort of lost it. I needed a little bit of a recharge and spark. Came back over. I think I went to it might have been AX 2001, 2002, somewhere around there. But I'd come back for Otakon, and they had Yasuhiro Naito there with, I believe it was Nishimura, the producer. And back then, I didn't have too much of a knowledge. I was still following, catching up on Cowboy Bebop. And so what I ended up doing was I ended up going back to Japan and cornering a Tsutaya Records, which is sort of their major rental outlet over there. That's sort of like what Blockbuster was, but more for all sorts of media. And I just ended up going through the entire 26 episodes, sort of in the same way that we did now. Of course, I didn't have the benefits of dubs or subtitles even. It was all still videotape. But for the most part, I watched it, and I really enjoyed just it being a different perspective in terms of sort of the spaghetti Western, or you could say maybe the Kung Fu Bruce Lee type of encounters. So I ended up liking it from there, and like you guys as well. It took a little bit of a while for me not to, I sat down and I really didn't follow it for a long time. But then when I went back to Japan, it just happened to be 2010, and that's when the movie came out. And so I actually saw the movie in Japanese as well, got it, hooked on it again, and I bought like the art book while I was there. I didn't read any of the manga, but for the most part, the anime is really what caught me.
Okay. And Hope, what's your story on this one?
Well, I first saw it in 2004, probably. I'm going to say it was 2004. It was partly due to like Adult Swim airings and reruns, and then I picked up the bits and pieces that I missed off of the Adult Swim airings on DVD, so I don't know when I bought those. Like, I don't know how long after 2004 all of the DVDs were released, But, like, I saw it part and parcel, and then I watched the whole thing, like, all the way through. But I was immediately just struck by the aesthetic, the character designs and stuff like that, and the sense of humor, like, all really caught me. And I, before buying the DVDs, I guess because I had watched the episodes kind of out of order and I didn't see any of the dramatic ones, I thought it was just, like, fun show, like, fun, happy show. And then when I actually watched the show, like, all the way through, I remember being just really rapt attention, like, heart, like, thundering in my chest, really upset at how dark it got, I guess. And so I was, you know, 14 at the time, and had a pretty sheltered kid. Like, my childhood was very, very sheltered as far as what media I could consume and could not consume. Trigun was not approved. I snuck it. Like, it was openly not approved. Like, what is this? Okay, you have to get rid of this, and, like, hiding it and that sort of thing. And, but anyway, so I watched the series all the way through, originally in English, and then I checked out the Japanese, and that was, like, even more, like, that kind of gave me a fuller picture of what the story was about, because it is kind of vague. But I mostly just wanted to learn more about, like, it worked so well for me emotionally, I wanted to learn more about the world and stuff like that, so I read the manga, and I got really obsessed with that, too, and I don't know, like, something about the story just really connected with me, and I was kind of a super fan, basically, since I saw it. I cosplayed as Millie, and with a Wolfwood at one of the first conventions I ever went to. I have a Trigun bag that is signed by both Johnny Youngbosch and Jeff Nimoy, and I have a giant Trigun poster hanging behind me at this very moment, and I made, like, a series of videos on it. Like, I'm obviously, like, an insane super fan for the show, so, like, that's kind of my background with it. I've seen it, like, an insane number of times. I'm extremely familiar with all of it. You know, it is one of my favorite anime things.
Yeah, I can vouch for that. She has the show basically memorized. So, like, I would be like, well, I'm not sure what happens in this. She would just tell me the scene and, like, exactly what they say in that scene.
Yeah.
And maybe give me the time code.
I didn't give you a time code. It was not that bad. I can't say. I'll tell you the time code.
But, yeah. Well, yeah. And so, I mean, are you comfortable with people still seeking out those videos that you did?
I don't...
They're pretty old at this
they're
point.
They're unfinished. I would rather... Like, I kind of feel like maybe this podcast is where I can air my full feelings now.
Okay,
all
right.
Makes more sense.
We first saw Trigun images of Vesh in A New Type in 1998 before it came out, before it aired on Japanese TV. Everyone was really excited. I was the first guy to get the first two episodes subtitled from the first fan sub tape, the first generation fan sub tape made from the Laserdisc. And we were all excited about it, and I showed up with the tape of the first two episodes. And everybody, you know, went apeshit for it, especially the opening theme. And you know, I remember people going really crazy for it. And I think I think about halfway through the show, a lot of the anime club, this was my anime college anime club days, they kind of seemed to lose interest. Like, I think the novelty of it had worn off, and the obsession with the little black cat had worn off. And, you know, the fervor over it had kind of died down. But I never finished watching the show. I think I bought the first couple DVDs. I don't think I watched all the way through them, and I just never finished the show. It wasn't really due to anything other than just kind of apathy. It wasn't like, I don't like this. It's just, I never got around to it. The show didn't really, like, grab me. Cut to 17 years later, they make this movie, and obviously we covered the movie. Hope reviewed the movie for the site, and everybody told me that the movie was kind of shrug, and yeah, it sure is a Trigun movie. Why'd they wait so long to make that?
Yeah.
And because everything was so lukewarm on it, I never saw it until today. Actually, I watched it earlier today. So that's kind of my experience with that show, is I was there right at the beginning, right when it was starting to hit. I've spent the last 15 years going to anime conventions. I've seen, you know, probably hundreds of Vash coats in my time. But the show I never personally, like, really connected with, and I never read the manga either. So, yeah, this was my first all the way through viewing of the series and the film. Hope, you're the person to, you know, give us the basic premise on Trigun.
All right, so starting
if
out...
If people don't know, tell us the story of everyone's favorite character design, right. Vash the Stampede.
Hey, he's a great character, too. I think he's an awesome character. And, but, so the very basics of it are, sort of post-apocalyptic, western-style landscape with, like, some weird little, like, steampunky sci-fi elements on the fringes. But it's basically like a western, but it's a little bit spacey, like there's multiple suns and moons in the sky, and they don't really explain it. But in this landscape, there is a there's a system of bounty hunters and outlaws, and the greatest outlaw of all time that has yet to be caught is a guy named Vash the Stampede, who is, you know, he's known for wearing a red coat and having blonde spiky hair and being the nicest darn guy that you'll ever meet, or whatever. Actually, that part is maybe not as well known. He's known for, like, destroying a city and just causing all kinds of property damage, but not really any fatalities. But he's, you know, if you meet him in person, he's just the nicest dude. So, you know, he hasn't really been caught yet, both because of his temperament and because he's kind of impossible to catch. So the story starts out with that bounty being passed along to an insurance agency who are being run into the red by damages caused by this guy. And it's like, okay, so they can't catch him, but let's just send some of our agents out to, like, try and minimize the damage he causes because he's a huge liability for an insurance company, which is kind of a weird, funny, like, I guess, angle to take on that plot. But so we have Vash, and then we have Meryl and Millie are the two insurance company agents that are sent out to guard him, and they have, like, some gun skills and stuff like that as well. Like, they're also sort of superhero-y gun slinging western character, badass characters. And, I mean, is that... How far do you want me to go from
that? Yeah, sure. That's good. I mean, for the first half of this show, you're basically watching the adventures of Vash and Millie and Meryl.
The insurance girls, yeah.
Or the insurance girls. Vash gets entwined in someone's life, travels to a town, winds up sort of embroiled in a scenario in which he is given the opportunity to espouse his worldview, mm-hmm. which is he never kills anybody for any reason. He always tries and succeeds in finding a way to basically cause mass destruction, unintentionally cause mass destruction without a single person dying.
He believes, like, everybody deserves a second chance. Like, even if you're a horrible rapist, murderer, monster, whatever, it doesn't matter. Everybody deserves a second chance, and nobody has the right to take somebody else's life. So, even if you have to destroy an entire town, so long as nobody dies, it's A-okay.
Yeah. So for 15 episodes or so, 14 episodes, you spend those episodes watching, in my opinion, the same episode over and over and over again. Vash shows up in a town. There's a conflict between two people. Typically, this involves some people are inside of a building, and either outlaws or the fuzz show up outside and go, "Come on out, we've got your whatever," and there's a showdown. Like, that happens a lot in Trigon, especially in those first, like, half. I mean, that's a spaghetti western cliche, so of course there's lots of that stuff in here. But generally, the first 14 episodes are lighthearted comedy with a little bit of character building, mm-hmm. and the joke is always, Vasher is hapless, happy-go-lucky, kind of
like
a horn dog,
clueless.
And a little bit of a drunk, uh-huh. and that's kind of his thing. And the show seems to revel in the incongruity between his appearance and his reputation and his actions and his personality to great extent. Like, they spend right. 14 episodes on this.
Well, I mean, there's a couple outliers in the first half. Like, he first meets the major villain of the piece, and then I would say the Sand Steamer episodes are more of an outlier, that they have a little bit more...
So there's a little bit more story going on there. You get dribs and drabs, mm-hmm. little pieces of the story that is to come. But for a lot of people, and I think this is a pretty common observation, that Trigon definitely feels split down the middle.
Yeah.
So there's the first half, which is what we're talking about. The second half is much darker and more plot-heavy. Mm-hmm. Jeff, what was your reaction to the first half? Were you sort of hoping that the whole show would be like that, or did you find yourself wanting it to pick up the story a little bit more?
I was actually a little happier that of the way that they presented the first half. My suspicions and my fears when I first started was, okay, they're going to keep going on to this joke, keep going on this joke. You know, here he is, something gets destroyed, like a Dirty Pair episode, and then, you know, go on to the next town.
Yeah, yeah.
But I did feel that as you know, things went by, they just sort of cranked up a little bit more of the story each time. I mean, from the beginning, it's, oh, this isn't Vash Stampede. This has got to be some just jerk, some happy-go-lucky moron who just gets lucky. And these guys who come in and demand money and shoot up the place, one of them has got to be Vash, but it's not them. So, I mean, obviously, from our point of view, we know it's Vash. We know that the guy in the red coat with the yellow sunglasses,
the protagonist,
we know that's Vash.
Fucker.
Yeah.
But at the same time, things build up in terms of, okay, through these encounters with the bad guys, what is Vash like? And we get that, you know, after two episodes, we get that whole idea that, okay, he's not exactly the gunslinger, but he's got expertise with guns. A few more episodes goes by, and then he finally realizes that by episode five, he finally shoots a bullet.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the things that I didn't expect when I see Trigun. I'm expecting all these bullets to be flying all over the place, and he doesn't fire a single bullet until episode five. So that struck me as odd when I first read it, the synopsis. And then as things went along, you know, you introduced Wolfwood later on in, I think, episode nine. And so he gets his sort of his partner in crime, the guy that he argues with in one scene and then drinks with in another. And I like that slow buildup. I was expecting, you know, seven or eight episodes of really episodic trash, nothing happening. And then, bam, they hit you with something. But I was glad to see a slow buildup from this.
Right. Yeah, my feeling about Vash in particular is, like, this is an iconic character design that people have really attached to over the years. And, you know, probably one of the most popular anime characters of all time. And I don't think that's up for debate. The character itself, I personally had a hard time connecting to him because he felt like, I made this joke earlier, I thought the show could really just be called Straw Man because Vash is just a walking set of ideals.
Disagree.
Like, all he is a set of principles that the show constantly puts in varying degrees of completely unrealistic. Like, if you had a pacifist view, your pacifism will never be challenged in the way that Vash's pacifism is challenged.
Right. Well, you don't live in Mad Max world.
Yes. And I understand, like, this is a fantasy scenario. It's just, it feels like it's putting an avatar of pacifism into this scenario and saying, well, let's see how pacifism functions when we put it through this. Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of how it felt to me. And so Vash felt like less of a character and more just an avatar of this particular worldview that Naitao was trying to make a point with it. Mm-hmm. And I felt like in the early going, it's, first of all, it is a hoary old 90s character stereotype. The I'm a crazy goofy guy, but I have a dark past. Yeah. You know, that's a 90s thing. Mm-hmm. I should also point out the thing that absolutely dominates Trigun for at least those first 14 or 15 episodes is, in my opinion, shitty Slayers-esque 90s comedy, which is just people overreacting to things.
Yeah, specifically Meryl. Meryl gets the brunt of that.
Yes.
And that is very much a thing that was...
Vash overreacts to everything, too. Like, that
well,
is...
yeah, true, but...
He does wild takes. He does the 90s wild take where they put their hands up and their fingers are all splayed out. Mm-hmm. That's a 90s thing. Like, that is that is a Slayers thing. That is a... Yeah, that is a Ranma One Half thing. Mm-hmm. That is a 90s thing. So it's very 90s comedy, like... That's the other thing that struck me in the first half. It's like, oh, this is a museum piece. Like, Trigun is a relic of the 90s.
Interestingly, like, it jumps out to me, like, the, you could do an entire podcast just on, like, the anime and manga and where they diverge. Not listing things, but just talking about thematically what makes a difference and what's more effective one place or another. Because they're just so incongruous, and at the same time they hit all the same story beats, and it's really weird and different. But like, Meryl and Millie specifically, it's interesting because Vash, he's about the same in the comics. He's a little more stoic, like he gets angry more often, shows like normal human emotion more, and he's less comedic. But for the most part, he's pretty close. He still does that obfuscating happy smile stupidity thing. Meryl and Millie, it's funny, they are rewritten to be like Slayer's characters because I, having just looked at the comics before the revisiting them and like making sure I remembered this right, they are like different, like, the basically, Meryl is the same except take out the tsundere thing, where she overreacts to Vax, thinks it's not him. Like, she knows it's him from the minute she meets him. She never, like, overreacts or has a comedic... She's not a comedy character at all. Millie is a comedy character only in that she is, like, dumb but wise, but she's still not as goofy as she is in the anime. Like, all that stuff is, like, Slayers-y stuff that they put in there because that was the time, and that's what you do with these characters, like, with these... set. Like, it's weird looking at Meryl and going, oh, they, like, turned her into Lena Inverse, because that's not what the source material had. Which is super interesting. Like, I don't know that I dislike it. It depends. Like, it depends on the scene and episode and how long it's going for. So... But I do think that those characters are funny, so it's hard to...
So the comedy hasn't aged out of relevance. Because to me, it's aged out of relevance. To me, I look at it and I go, this isn't funny anymore. Mm-hmm. But obviously, you don't...
It depends. Well, some of them are really bad. The episodes that are really bad and not funny are the ones where they try to juxtapose it with really dark drama, and it's like, okay, it's time to let it go.
Well, the show has major tone problems through the entire run.
But earlier on, when they are pure comedy, like, one of my favorites, I really like the third episode with, like, this drunk gunsmith. I think that one is pretty much tone perfect. Like, I don't think that episode has any tone problems. And there, I think, like, the Slayers comedy does work really well.
Well, I think for that, especially for that episode alone, that depends on the background characters or the sub characters, and not necessarily Meryl and Millie. I personally looked at them in these first 13 episodes, and I saw them more as sort of an 80s or 90s sitcom where they just cross their arms and that's our Vash,
yeah.
You know, and sort of like, you know, Meryl will get mad and she'll be forgiving, and then she'll get mad again. And Millie will just be there and drop her stun gun and hit somebody in the face with it. So I really didn't like, you know, their characterizations in the first 13 episodes. But, you know, they were there for what they were. And that was dumb comedy relief.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, so how do you feel like, I mean, in general, like, I mean, did you see that, like, that's like a specifically 90s style of comedy? Like, it's a very 90s thing. And, like, did you feel watching it again, like, oh, this isn't particularly relevant now?
I think looking at their characterizations and really thinking at all the things I've seen in the 90s, I definitely got like a vibe of maybe Sorcerer Hunters.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, yeah.
It's sort of like, yeah. Oh, there goes Carrot. And one yells at them. The other's like, oh, well, it's just Carrot. You know, that sort of, I think, grouping. It wasn't like a five-person grouping, but I still got that feeling that two of them were there just to chew out and or laugh at Vash when he did something stupid or did something incredibly damaging.
Well, yeah, it's a bunch of straight men. That's effectively what those characters are. Like, the 90s anime comedy relied on straight men overreacting to a doofus.
Right.
So that was, you know, that's kind of the formula.
Mm-hmm. Saber marionette right there.
Yeah, it's just that comedy, like the kind of comedy that you see in Trigun, if you were to watch like the first couple episodes, they don't make that anymore.
No.
Like, it doesn't exist anymore.
And I think it works better for me just in that because I liked the story and I liked the characters. Like, I got what Meryl and Millie were about outside of just making jokes, and that the drama that comes later also helps with that. But if that hadn't been the case, yeah, I bet it wouldn't work at all. Like, it mostly just works because I like them already, A, and B, like, there is a story there. Like, there is the whole thing with them overreacting to that in episode 6, Vash like attaches himself to a hot lady, and you know Meryl is not happy about this, and you know that's played up a lot, and then slight twist on expectations, like the lady is trying to kill him for a very serious reason that is important to the story, and I think that episode is also not tone blind. I think it works really well. So it's like, it depends. Like, it's just sort of a toss up.
So there's a really important thing that I think it really helped me understand why the show is the way it is when you explained this to me, and it came as a result. I made an observation about something that happens in episode 5. Where Vash, like, he has spent the last 4 or 5 episodes, maybe this is a little late, it's the Sand Steamer one, which I think is
seven or eight.
He spends first 6 or 7 episodes never getting angry at anything. Mm-hmm. He does not get angry. In fact, the show suggests that Vash is a big goof And, you know, he's always going to be this lighthearted, happy-go-lucky guy. But when his dark past comes around, like, don't mess with him. Like, if he gets mad, something bad might happen. Like, that's kind of what they sort of suggest.
Mm-hmm.
In the episode with the sand steamer, 7 or 8 or whatever it is, a little kid is crawling around in the air ducts and, like, hits a duct cover and it, like, bangs him in the head. And he gets pissed at the kid and he starts yelling at him and, like, shaking him around and stuff. It is wildly out of character for him at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And you were explaining to me that's the beginning of the manga.
Mm-hmm. The manga starts with the episode 5 bit where he is, once again, not as... He's a little more stoic. He's not as, like, unflappable. And then the sand steamer story is the very next story. And it's like, yeah, he's not... He gets pissed all the time. It's just never serious pissed. It's like, where's your parents? Like, you hit me in the face. Where's your folks? Like, it's like that.
Right. But then you told me something about the production of the show that's really important.
Yeah.
So go over that if you could.
Okay. So if anybody can find the source for this, that would be amazing. Because I am referencing stuff that I read when I was obsessed about the show on GeoCities and saved to, like, a Windows 3.1 computer that is no longer in my possession. And those places are gone. But it was interviews with... Satoshi Nishimura, Yasuhiro Naito, and Yosuke Kuroda. If you don't know, that's the director, the original manga author, and the series story editor, who also wrote every script for the show. They discussed pretty openly the, like, production issues with the show. Specifically, that Satoshi Nishimura was approached with directing this before they had found a story editor. And he wanted to straight up, and production was basically already slated for this before they had found a story guy to write the scripts, as more of a Slayer-style comedy than just straight adapting the manga. Because they looked at the manga, and if you've seen it, it is full. It's a little like Helsing in that it's full of stuff they couldn't animate in the 90s on any kind of, like, they just can't. It's full of crazy alien stuff and, like, even more bizarre vehicles and guns and characters and monsters than you see in the show. And he's like, well, we can't draw that, so, like, let's just make it a little bit more toned down. Let's make it more of an episodic comedy, and there will be a villain. We'll make, like, Legato the villain, but it's not going to be the same as the manga. So they brought on Yosuke Kuroda, and Yosuke Kuroda is, in my opinion, he has made a lot of bad things. He worked a lot in the 90s, and he is not necessarily a very good writer, like, at all. And I think some of that does show in some of his adaptation choices in the anime. However, he was a big fan of the comics. And when they brought him on, he was already kind of pushing for, no, we have to make this, like, he said, this is a really strong character story, and we have to bring the drama of this into the anime, and I'm really not happy with the direction this is taking. And so they sort of pushed back and forth on this for a while, and during production, they went, okay, we will basically take this, we will talk to Naito about the story beats of where this is going, like, what are the important things that happen in the story, and we will, on a budget, like, recreate the dramatic arc of these characters the best that we can. But, like, so that's why the story shifts as heavily as it does, and it's tricky, because on one hand, I'm on the director's side in that the show is more tone consistent when he was just sticking to what he wanted to do, which was a 90s comedy. But on the other hand, the thing that made Trigun, even when it was wonky and tone blind and uncomfortable and, like, barely animated, the thing that stuck with me when I first saw it as a kid was that emotional journey, was the dramatic stuff. So I'm glad they put it in there, even if they couldn't execute it very well. But at the same time, I wish that it had been executed well, and it's not like I dislike the tone and happiness of the first half, so it's tricky, but it is a troubled production by the admission of the people working on it.
Yeah, I mean, basically what you have here is kind of half a manga adaptation, half anime original, and then on top of that you have a series director kind of at war with the writer.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of things are working against Trigun on the production side, and you can tell, like, that manifests in the show. It is a show that is sometimes at war with itself. Tonally. And yeah, so it's an interesting, that puts it into a lot of context for me. Like, that helps me kind of suss out, like, oh, why is this show so weird? Like, why is it so
it's
off?
Weird.
And it feels like it's multiple different shows mashed together.
You're talking about the whole multiple show thing, and something that struck me when I was sort of reading some information about the movie. I think that they were talking sort of about the underscoring discussions that happened before Trigun was even produced. I think they were talking about actually starting it as an OAV series.
Right.
And so maybe they might have had that whole idea of, okay, we're going to do it as this type of show. And then somewhere or another, I don't know if it was the writers, if it was Naito himself, or even if it was Madhouse themselves suggesting it, but it got turned into a TV series. So somewhere along the line, it made that transition. Maybe it just threw a wrench in the works and they sort of had to play it by ear for a few episodes.
Maybe. Well, I mean, it certainly would have benefited from an OV, from the time and money that they would have had to produce an OVA series.
Yeah.
Even as OVAs were in serious decline in the late 90s, you know, if they'd done it that way, maybe, who knows. But so let's get into the second half of the show here, because there's not a whole lot to say about the first half of the series. Mm-hmm. It's antics. And then it takes a hard right turn into dark and gritty sci-fi territory. And I guess go ahead and wrap up the show.
All right. So somewhere along the line, episode 12, Vash runs into a man named Legato Blue Summers, because Naito and his names. But Legato Blue Summers, I just want to say that like 12 times. Legato Blue Summers is a very bad man who tells Vash that he has come for his life, specifically at the behest of a certain person that Vash might know quite well. And that is actually Vash's long-lost twin brother. And as it turns out, his twin brother, Knives, had a bad altercation with him in the past that Vash thought he was dead, but he wasn't sure. He was like, I can still feel that he's alive, I just don't know what to do about it. But Knives is feeling better enough that he's come up with a grand scheme to break Vash's spirit. And this grand scheme is to take 12 or so people that have a grudge against him or else have lost all faith in humanity in some way due to Vash's actions or just the circumstances of living on this barren western planet. And he names them the Gung Ho Guns, and they are his assassins who will go out and basically systematically push Vash as hard as possible and break him and test his ideals and test his pacifism until it completely destroys him. Because Knives is very, very upset at the bad past that they share. And Legato Blue Summers is like his scion. It's like he's like the mouth of Sauron or whatever. He's the lead of the assassins, but he doesn't do much attacking. He's just sort of there to be the superpowered arbiter, I guess, and make sure everything goes down smoothly. Because all the other assassins have superpowers of some kind, because alien technology. But Legato specifically has the greatest superpower. He can mind control people, like unlimited amount of people, as long as they're kind of close to him. Unlimited amount of people, he can mind control them into doing whatever he wants. If he wants them to shoot their heads off, that's what'll happen. If he wants them to tag other people, that's what'll happen. If he wants to put them in the line of fire, like, he can do that. So that is basically his trump card in messing with Vash's pacifism. And it's pretty potent, obviously. So the entire rest of the show is a series of him fighting these Gung Ho Guns. Last thing, the cherry on the sundae is a character by the name of Nicholas D. Wolfwood, who is the deuteragonist of the show. And he is the unnamed Gung Ho Gun. He is a member of the Gung Ho Guns, but nobody but him and Knives know this. He's like a ringer. And his job is to befriend Vash and sort of reinforce his ideas and help him and be his buddy. And all of this is working to, like, the most terrible, like, betrayal that Knives can come up with to destroy Vash and make him kill someone out of hatred, which he thinks will break him and basically does. So that is the incredibly, like, convoluted and over-the-top revenge plot that dominates the second half of the show.
Right, and then in between all of this, you're also getting his backstory, mm-hmm. which is really important. So if you want to run down the crazy sci-fi backstory, you know, briefly here.
Okay, so the reason that humanity is on this planet, is on this barren dust ball planet called Gunsmoke, and the reason that they're living, like, half 1800s technology and half, like, super-powered future technology is because a long time ago, in the future of Earth, like, Earth has been sapped of all its resources by just by greedy people, like, overusing the Earth's resources, along with a technology that they've developed called plants. Basically, there was an interdimensional, like, alien being that came to Earth, and it looks like a delicate, like, angel-like thing. Like, it's like white, crispy, very delicate angel woman-y thing with like extra heads and boobs and legs hanging off of it. And that grows exponentially and grows other body parts and wings and stuff like that. And so basically they discovered these things, learned how to, basically that they were an unquenchable source of energy, and they like stuck them in light bulbs, screwed them into giant power plants, and that's what powered a lot of future technology. And that's why they had this burst of cool future tech, is that they were able to invent and create so much more thing with the power of these things, with the power of these plants. So it seems like a far cry from where we started, but okay, that is the backstory. They use up the Earth. They have to go colonize other planets, so they take off into space and they take the plants with them. And it's like, maybe if those things ate up, like overusing and abusing the power of those things ate up the Earth, maybe just let them go. But you know, the idea is humanity can't stop, you know, nuclear bombs, stuff like that. And so they take off into space. One of the plants that of the many that they're experimenting on was pregnant, but because they don't know this, like they can't, like I said, they're very benign sort of like symbols of like Earth and space and nature, so they don't speak, they don't communicate directly, so they don't know that this thing is pregnant, but they've been like experimenting on it by injecting it with human DNA and stuff. It gives birth on one of the colonization ships, and out come Vash and Knives as babies. And so they are sort of half plant, half human. They have like free will and they develop as people, but they have plant powers. So they are able to speak for themselves and their species. And Vash grows to love humanity. Knives grows to hate humanity because of their relationship with plants and nature. And so he crashes the ships on a barren planet where he thinks humanity will die. And they sort of struggle on. And the people who kind of know how to use lost technology use it to, like, kind of survive. And that's why it looks like a Western on the planet. But it's basically the Vash and Knives are really old and have been there since the beginning, and they are, like, immortal, superpowered dudes. So there you go. Who, one's evil, one's good. One arguing for humanity to survive, one arguing for its extinction. There you go.
Right. And so this all kind of culminates with a couple of key events. There's kind of two key events that wrap up the show.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, Vash sort of wins his existential argument with Wolfwood, who follows his advice, decides not to kill a guy who's trying to kill him, and gets killed. And then he faces his brother in Mortal Kombat. Or actually, there's three major events.
Yeah.
Wolfwood gets killed, and then Legato effectively breaks Vash by forcing him to kill it.
Right. Well, it was Wolfwood's death was supposed to be like the final straw that would drive Vash just far enough to kill Legato, and he does. So it was like, there we go. Knives is like, I won. This is exactly what I wanted. So then they have to face each other with he thinks Vash's spirit having been broken. So
right. And what happens is basically Vash just comes to a realization that his worldview is, he doesn't exactly come to the realization that it's naive, but I think he
untenable?
Sort of comes. Yeah, it's untenable. It's not sustainable. It's not realistic.
I think he comes to a sort of a realization that absolute pacifism just isn't really effective when you're trying to save everyone and saving yourself at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, he could only do it because he was superpowered, and trying to inflict that idealism on others, especially the people you've saved, like, usually they'll grow to resent you for it. It's not, you know, like, he's saving their lives, but he is not taking into account or being accountable for how they live their lives afterward. He's just saying, okay, live. Your future is open, like, you have all the power in the world to change, and it's like, that's not really fair, and it's probably going to cause them to resent you and cause more bloodshed down the line, and people will use that against you.
Right.
And it's like, it's a little bit self-destructive. So, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And in the very end, spoiler alert, Vash wins.
Vash wins, but he doesn't kill his brother. He doesn't kill Knives. So.
Yeah, spoiler alert for everybody there.
Yeah, yeah, right. So when you sum it up like that, when you sum up Trigun simply like that, when mm-hmm. you just like lay it out and say, here's what happens, here are the themes, here's how it wraps up, it sounds pretty good. In my opinion, the act of watching it is a sloppy, poorly told mess mm-hmm. that is thematically confused and one of the worst looking TV shows I've seen in a very long time. I think Trigun looks like hot garbage the entire way through, with moments of decent animation sprinkled in amongst the crude scribblings that Madhouse told us was animation. Like, I couldn't believe how bad the show looked. Mm. And I thought the storytelling was clumsy, too. I thought it left too much open. It didn't explain certain things. Knives is just evil. Like, you explained it to me, because it's explained in the manga that Knives finds out what plants are used for, knows that he's a plant, and then hates humanity as a result. This is not mentioned in the TV show.
So, believe it or not, like, I actually did get more of that when I first watched it, before even looking it up in the manga, because the show relies on... Because I was very... Here's the other reason Trigun really resonated with me when I was 14. I was raised in a super-duper Christian-y household. And Trigun is, like, really Christian-y? Like... super Christian-y in ways that people don't even notice. And one of the biggest things about it is it really co-opts and sticks with the idea, both the idea and symbology of original sin. And this is used to show Knives' fall specifically. And the idea of original sin is that you are given free will at the cost of innocence, and it will cause other people to be other innocents to be harmed. And so that's what happens to Knives specifically, is he's a good kid, and he's like... The thing that makes him different from Vash is very trusting and open and about his emotions, and Knives bottles things up and sort of thinks about them and stews, and he tries to be self-reliant, and this bites him in the ass because there's a scene where... And this, I got this as a 14-year-old, like, I got it. It would be really nice if they included stuff about the plants to explain this, but on a symbolic level, I got it. The scene is... Vash and Knives are getting old enough where they're going to get their hair cut, because they've been just growing at an incredibly rapid rate, and their hair is down to their ass, and it's like, okay, it's time to cut your hair. And Rem, their, like, mother caretaker, is cutting Vash's hair, and she cuts it for him, and she tells him about her beliefs and her philosophy and how she feels that the world is. And while she's talking about this, Knives is waiting to have his hair cut, and he's having flashbacks. He's remembering another crew member on the ship who beats the shit out of him because he's scared of him, because he thinks he's a monster, because he grew up really fast and is really smart and, you know, is a plant. And anyway, so he's remembering this while Rem is talking about something that he thinks is, you know, he thinks this is incongruous. And as this is happening, it shows an apple slowly falling from the apple tree in the room where they're getting their hair cut.
It's very subtle.
It's very subtle. When it hits the ground, Knives gets up, leaves, and she's like, okay, it's your turn. And Knives has gone to another room that has... butterflies, which, if you know, plants being what they are, like, has butterflies tacked up against a tack board up against a wall, and he's looking at those, and after he's had this speech about, like, do you think we'll be eaten someday, like, people eat the apples off the trees and people use the plants, and he's like, and so he's looking at these butterflies, and he begins to cut his own hair. He's exercising his own free will, his will of choice to live his own life and not be not have it dictated to him by humans. And so he cuts his hair, he looks up at the butterflies, and he says, it's wrong, and then he hits the dash, and then, like, that's his transforming moment. And I got that. All of that stuff would be so much better if they had directly stated the stuff about the plants. But in the anime, they can't and won't and don't want to draw plants. So they use original sin imagery and comparing him to, like, trees and the earth and how the earth was raped by humans instead of the alien part. So,
yeah, they try to draw the plant once, and it looks terrible.
It looks awful.
It's just a big difficult. Fleshy blob thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
but I mean, getting on to what Hope was talking about in terms of all this Christian symbolism, I mean, it's very vibrant once you hit to that episode, that flashback episode. You do get that scene where they're looking at, I believe... Vash and Knives are with Rem. They're looking at a struggling butterfly that gets caught in a spider web.
Mm-hmm.
And Vash goes to try to help the butterfly out. And instead, Knives just crushes the spider instead.
Mm-hmm.
And right there, you definitely see from that moment really what their, I think, your opinions are in terms of sin.
Mm-hmm.
You have the Vash wanting to be pacifist, wanting to save as many people as possible. And Knives basically targeting the sin and thinking, if I stop the sin, which is human, all of human,
mm-hmm.
then I'm going to end up being a pure person because of it.
In his defense, plants are blameless. And even though they don't show them, they don't talk about them in the show, they use instead an analog for the earth. And it's like, yeah, nature is sort of this blameless, pure, innocent thing that we exploit. Like, it can't speak for itself. It is this benign... People have moral obligation. The earth does not. So he's like, okay, well, I'll punish those that are able to sin. And because this other thing isn't able to sin, like, it is perfect, it is pure, it's me. So he becomes, like, Earth Nazi, for lack of a better explanation. Like, plant Earth Nazi. So...
Right, right. And, you know, maybe they shouldn't have named him Knives.
That was a bad idea on their part.
It was a bad idea.
Why did you name the child that?
Well...
So that stuff is poorly explained, and I honestly, I really... I mentioned this before, but it did feel like this was a couple of different worldviews fighting it out in circumstances that these worldviews would never be tested under. And so it wasn't practical at all. And it felt like I was watching a rhetorical argument that had little to do with reality, and it took me out of it, and I felt myself disconnected from the characters, and thus I was intrigued by the show, I was entertained by it to an extent, but I wasn't connecting with it emotionally because of that disconnect, because it felt like it was just two worldviews presented as a rhetorical argument. And you know, you, I know, like, obviously you disagree very strongly with that.
Well, I would absolutely actually agree with that. If Vash and Knives' childhood was portrayed as this completely, like, if they were born out of the plant and they, like, stepped out of it and were this sort of passive Klaatu, is that the name of the alien that comes to Earth in the that one movie? Well, I don't remember.
Are you talking about the day the Earth stood still?
Yes.
Yeah.
If they were like a Klaatu figure, then I agree. I think that it wouldn't work at all. Because their ideals are basically foisted on them from very direct circumstances that are observable, and they can be compared to, like, human children, except, like, one of them is... The idea that they don't age really links, I think, metaphorically to how stolid they are and stubborn in their values. It's like, okay, they don't age, they don't change, they are not as weathered and, like, affected by the world as humanity is. And that's an old, you know, aliens in fiction thing. But, like, so starting it out from, like, childhood and showing how their childhoods differed and how their personalities basically changed how they reacted to being mothered by this woman... it gives it context to me, a human context of, okay, they're not just symbols. It's not like they came out of nowhere and he's like, oh, he's just a pacifist and he's just a nihilist. Like, it's not that. It's very, or I guess he's not a nihilist, a Nazi. But, like, you see directly where it comes from. You see them as basically human children before all this stuff, you know, determines the rest of their lives. So that's, to me, is a very human connection. To me, I relate to the character of Vash, like, a lot. Like, I think I feel very sympathetic toward him. I don't think he's a symbol at all. But if that stuff had not been there, I would agree with you. Like, they definitely had to show that childhood. So I thought that was important.
To me, it just seemed like it was all in service of this, presenting this as a worldview. Like, well, here's what happens when you have a person like this. This is what, you know, it's these are visual sort of metaphors. It's science fiction. It's an allegory for mm-hmm. the way a person is raised. Mm-hmm. But it's not any different from, you know, the allegories you see in, like, Star Trek or whatever. Mm-hmm. I ignored that part. It's like, okay, you're showing me this as a function of, well, here's this worldview, here's how somebody comes to this worldview.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to pit these two worldviews against each other in the Old West. The problem is, extending their lifetime, making them, like, hundreds of years old, made it more plausible. To me, that kind of wrecked the premise, because Vash should have figured it out at that point. Don't go into a town. Mm-hmm. Don't go into a town. Because if you go into a town, people will die. Like, he knows it's going to happen.
Well, that would've...
He carves a path of destruction across Gunsmoke mm-hmm. and keeps getting involved, and even to the point where he renounces his identity, puts on, like, a fright wig and a different pair of sunglasses and goes, quote-unquote, undercover, he still goes into a town and becomes, like, an innkeep.
To me...
And it's like, get the fuck out of there. Those people are going to die because you're there.
But to me, that makes it much more, like, sympathetic and realistic. Because if he was, like, really, this perfect ideal, then, yeah, that's what he would do. He would be, like, this... like stone. He would be this stone solid martyr who would be like who would have everything figured out and would really put everybody else's safety above his own happiness. But he's not. He's a child. So he acts like a child. He has the dogma in place that he sticks to, but he sticks to it like a kid. And he wants to be human, so he hangs around with humans all day and pretends he is, and like tells everybody he's 23 or whatever. And it's like, you know, he.
And I guess to me, that's
to me is more sympathetic.
To me, that's so disconnected from an actual person that if you're going to present this as like a, here's two philosophies on humanity and life, and we're going to give them to you in these totally like alien characters. This is a 100-year-old alien man-child who acts like he's 10 and carries around the Rurouni Kenshin no-killing philosophy, and he's it's extreme pacifism.
Right.
And he's also a dangerous killing machine. Like, it's just, it's so far removed. It's so far removed from an identifiable, like, human being that I found myself, like, not only disconnected from these characters emotionally, but I saw it as this kind of really fucked up, kind of poorly presented rhetorical argument. Like, that's what the show ultimately felt like to me. And so I disconnected from it. And that was ultimately my response to the show was like, well, that was okay, and I get what they were saying, but, well, that was such a mess. Like, what a messy, like, ugly show that just, I just didn't connect to it. Enough of my whining. Jeff, what did you think of the second half of the show? What did you take away from it?
I think, personally, I liked the introduction of the Gung Ho Guns just because it gave him sort of a Ninja Scroll approach of things where you're getting these odder characters to challenge him as he goes through each chamber, let's say. And as a reminder, Naito was a big fan of Ninja Scroll when he was doing all of this research. So I enjoyed that aspect of it. It wasn't quite like a Shonen Jump sort of thing where, like, in Rurouni Kenshin, you had Kenshin would go through it, but it would be all of his buddies would be joining up and taking down each of them. And all the people that he took down would then be joining his side. Mm-hmm. I liked how it was Vash and Wolfwood, and that was really all it was. That if the Gung Ho Guns were defeated, they really didn't learn their lesson. They took their own lives, or their lives were taken from them. There was no dawning of things. And because of that, I really, really got to enjoy Legato as a bad guy. Mm-hmm. That I think he was one of those villains that, while everybody associates Knives as being sort of the guy that, you know, he's the final boss. But Legato had that whole thing where he doesn't even care about his own people, that he doesn't care about himself. And so, therefore, taking them out, whether it be making them do it themselves or commanding one of the other Gung Ho Guns to do it, I enjoyed that aspect, that it was centered around Vash and Wolfwood, and it wasn't being taken care of by any of the other bad guys learning in the process.
And I think it just occurred to me, like, another interesting thing about the Gung Ho Guns and about Vash's perspective is Vash has seen, he is coming from a place of enlightenment. Like, he knows how to use all the lost technology. He has seen Earth. He's like a lot of stuff that he is familiar with, and he's seen how things can be, and that's what he tells people about. But he's telling people something about something that they've literally never seen. He's like, well, there can be like an Eden, there can be like happiness, there can be, I've seen trees before and grass and like people living in harmony, like I've seen that shit, it's real. And people, he's talking to people who have literally never experienced this. They're living on a giant dust ball where slavery is rampant. And that's another thing that the anime kind of tones down. They had a lot of content restrictions, and so they can't really talk about, like, the fact that most, like, a lot of women and children get enslaved, and there's organ trading and crazy shit like that, assassins everywhere, body counts. They don't really get to talk about that very much. So it's mostly just, gosh, it's dry here, you know, but you have to rely mostly on the words of Wolfwood and Legato, who say, like, we should have never, like, I should have just never been born if I had to live on Gunsmoke. Like, it's that bad. You just kind of have to believe them because you don't see a whole lot of it. You see hints at the slave trade, and that's about it.
You see a bunch of brown boxes and badly drawn Western peasants.
Yeah. You have to, I mean, a lot of the... Here's the big thing that I like about here's the reason that I forgive why Trigun is so goddamn ugly. Because it's goddamn ugly. The sound design and the score in that show is really, really good.
I wouldn't argue with that.
It is compensating for what the visuals can do marvelously. Like, there's shit that's done with sound in Trigun that I don't think I've heard done in other anime that's really great. Specifically, just down to the way that Legato talks. Like, the telepathy... Like, normally, telepathy in anime is like, okay, put a reverb on it. And the telepathy...
It's very creative.
Yeah. Telepathy for Legato is it swishes from the left channel to the right channel, and sometimes his words come back on top of the other one, and it's sort of... It's not reverb, it is... What's the word? It's, shoot, my brain just went... Phew, but it's convolution. Like, where it sounds like you're at the pit of a deep metal well, and it comes up and back, and then they switch the sound. They switch the left and right sound channels while they're doing that, and it's like, oh, that's so creepy. Like, especially if you're watching it with headphones, it's creepy just on speakers by itself. And 5.1, it's really great. There's a 5.1 mix for the dub, not for the Japanese, but still, like, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of great sound work in the show that I think, thank God, compensated for a lot of the ugly visuals. But yeah, I don't, you know.
Nothing makes up for those visuals for me. I can't get over it. Like, there are frames of this show that are bottom line amateur. Mm-hmm. They are amateur. They are so crude, I couldn't believe it. And like, I've seen mountains of 90s anime, and this seemed like an especially crude effort. Like, episodes would go by where you'll have a few good cuts. Mm-hmm. Like, Madhouse put some effort into a few cuts, like, per episode. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you get a whole episode with just trash.
Yeah.
But, and as the show went on, they seemed to get better about picking stills that weren't badly drawn. Mm-hmm. So, like, in the first 15 episodes, you'd have, like, a still, and the characters' faces are all misshapen and fucked up looking, and the peasants in the background, the settlers, are all screwed up. And for some reason, they would hold that for like 5 seconds, and you're like, yo, I can see that whoever did this couldn't draw. Halfway through the show, it changes. They start using some filters a little bit more. They start picking shots for still frames that don't look as bad. The show still looks like shit in the last half. Mm. It's just they get a little bit better with their shot selection, and they put a little bit more effort into some of the fancier, the shinier cuts. But it's still extremely limited animation.
It also becomes more tone consistent in those last.
It does. It gets, yeah, it sticks with the "no, this is serious now" tone pretty much through the rest of it, with the exception of a few key pieces. But yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, so Jeff, you watched the whole thing all the way through again for this. I mean, ultimately, like, are you on the, like, if someone said, hey, should I watch, like, I'm gonna watch some anime from the 90s, is this like a must recommend?
I need to collect my thoughts there for a moment, but I would say a cautious yes.
Cautious.
If you go into it expecting to be, you know, wild like a Cowboy Bebop episode, if you're expecting to get bright colors, if you're expecting to get, you know, energy in each corner of the cell, you're not going to be satisfied. If you go into it expecting, you know, this is the West. It's going to be gray. It's going to be dusty, and it's going to be, you know, it's going to be poor in terms of not quality, but in terms of the people, the beings that are in this. So if you go into it expecting, you know, jazz hands and all of this pizzazz coming through it, you're not going to be happy with it. If you go into it expecting a spaghetti Western, then I think you're going to be more satisfied.
A spaghetti Western that looks like a G.I. Joe episode from 1987, well, like animated mostly in like Korea or something, like, you know.
One of the other things that I find myself forgiving the art is that this was a late night TV show. And so I don't think they were expecting a ton of people to be wowed enough to really put in a full 100% effort.
Yeah,
I'll be honest, that's the way that I saw it.
This was 98, like, this was pre-late night anime as it exists now.
Look, man, you can do things.
This was Wednesday night at around 1 a.m. in the morning.
That is not an excuse to have frames throughout the entire show that looked like the person doing it straight up couldn't draw. Mm. Like, terrible draftsmanship. Like, this is bad work. It's bad work. The time slot doesn't excuse it. I'm not, there is no, like, expectations or whatever. It's bad work. I'm sorry. There's no excuse.
I'm not excusing it. I'm saying it makes sense. I'm like, oh, they probably weren't given much in the
That's
world.
Why it looks like that. Yeah. But if you have artists who can fucking draw, then the still frames are going to look fine.
Yeah.
I've been watching anime for 18 years. Yeah, I know what it looks like.
I get you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to agree with you that it's not the it's not Picasso. It's not even...
Sometimes it is.
maybe it's more, you know, Dolly in the terms of it's, you know, sloppy in the terms of the artwork. But I, as someone who wanted to get a story out of every anime that I've seen in the 90s, something like Trigun was really, I think, turned me on.
Right. Yeah, the narrative is, you know, for what it is, it's pretty sophisticated, especially if you were just getting into anime back then. It's definitely not like anything else. And to this day, you know, I think Trigun is unique. And not a lot of places go for the sci-fi western still. It's a tough genre. Like, there's not a lot of success in that genre, so not a lot of people do it.
And it's also tough in the sense that you're following up Rurouni Kenshin that just basically, I think, was finishing up while Trigun was going on.
Yeah.
So you had a Japanese version of pacifism going on at the same time.
That was a mega hit. That was a giant Shonen Jump thing. You know, yeah, for sure. For sure. But it's impossible. Of course, I mean to harp on the art, but... To me, that's a huge stumbling block, and there's no... Well, it was late night. Yeah, so what? It doesn't excuse it. But, so, we should talk about the film. Okay. Trigun Badlands Rumble, which came out 10 years, 12 years after the show had wrapped. The show was a bigger success here in the States than it was in Japan, for sure. The movie, to my knowledge, was made... over the course of, like, 7 or 8 years. Like, it took Madhouse a long time to make that movie. When it did come out, it tanked pretty badly. Mm. And
it was, like, $131,000 for the box office. Compare that to, like, $2 million that Cowboy Bebop's movie got.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't think anybody had box office expectations, and I'm sure Funimation sold plenty of Blu-rays. Like, I'm sure... they made their money on Blu-rays on that one. Well, maybe not. I mean, who knows? But for whatever reason, this was not a big enough success to keep the franchise going. I firmly believe that if that movie had been a big hit, there would be a Trigun Maximum TV show. So I just saw this movie for the first time today after years of hearing people say it is the most lukewarm nothing in the world.
Yeah.
And,
which it is.
I liked it. Ah! I thought the movie... in fact, I would go so far as to say that if you want to watch Trigun, you can just watch the movie. You don't need to watch the TV show.
Bring back the old Zach.
Well, here's the thing. You didn't ask me if I would actually recommend Trigun today. I don't know that I would. I should be very clear. Like, I think it depends on who you are. When I got older and I looked back at it and I was like, oh, it's really ugly and the tone awkward and like, and I would like not mention it, but like, I liked the series enough and people knew that I liked the series enough and I talked about it being a favorite that they checked it out and I got like a ton of messages from people, like including one of our writers who like saw it 1 year ago and still won't shut up about it sometimes, but like people who saw it like in 2014 or 2012 or whatever and are like, this was emotionally like, you know, taxing for me. I loved it. Thank you for introducing me to this. And it's like, so it apparently still has some emotional resonance. It just, I think it depends on who you are. So like, would I recommend Trigun? Like, it depends on who you are because I still like plain. I still love it. And apparently it does work for people who see it now. And technically when I saw it, it was 2004. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't when it came out anyway.
Well, I don't want to cast any aspersions. This is a hit show and it's a hit show for a reason. People connected to it. I'm right. The outlier. I just said watch the movie instead of the show.
The movie
no
sucks.
One says that. But I liked the movie. I'll tell you why I liked the movie. So The movie, for people who don't know, is kind of just set in between events of the TV series because obviously they wanted Wolfwood to be in it. Mm-hmm. It involves Vash and the insurance girls and Wolfwood kind of converging on this town. There's a bad guy named Gasback, and mm-hmm. he is a robber, and his whole thing is like, well, I'm going to pull off the greatest heist in history. There's a Shonen Jump movie girl that has, and it's an original character just for the film, of course, that Vash runs into.
They always have red hair.
With red hair, and Vash runs into her, and they have an adventure, basically. What's his face? Gasback is going to steal this enormous bronze statue, and his plan is to steal the plant that's in this town. He does that. Wolfwood is introduced as Gasback's bodyguard, and he owes him like a life contract, like Chewbacca or something. It's just it's a bullshit ass pull to get Wolfwood in the movie. Mm-hmm. And he's like, "Well, my contract is up the minute you step through the door of this guy's house to steal his shit." That happens, you know, halfway through the film so that Wolfwood can be a good guy for the rest of it. Mm-hmm. And you can introduce Vash and Wolfwood pointing their guns at each other, which is sort of like it's Trigun, so we better show these two characters pointing their guns at each other.
Yeah. My God, does that happen a lot in the manga.
Yeah.
They upped the Vash and Wolfwood at some point, like, you know, like, yeah. to a bazillion. It's, like, barely in the anime, and it's just a bazillion.
Well, anyway, the movie wraps up, basically, of course, they stop the robber, and it turns out the girl this whole time was Gasback's daughter, and Vash had an opportunity to kill Gasback 20 years ago and didn't. And the girl spends the whole movie sort of blaming Vash for not killing him, and ultimately it turns out if he had killed Gasback, she wouldn't have been born. And then this brings home the TV show's theme. It repeats the TV show's theme of, which I think is probably the only message out of Trigun that I took that really I thought was a cool and kind of interesting thing to say, which is that, you know, if you're gonna live by an ethos and you're gonna live by these principles and you're gonna try to be the best person you can be, that involves making hard choices. Sometimes being a good person means you're making a hard, potentially fatal choice that will not benefit you in the immediate aftermath and might hurt people that you love, but you are making the world a better place. The world is a better place through your actions. It's like a pebble in a pond, the ripples eventually spread out and become manifest, and you become a good person that way. And that's how you're a good person. Your goodness impacts the world in ways that you might not even get to experience.
Right.
Which is a very Christian message.
It inspires others, which is like it, and it, those others, bad things might happen to them. Like Wolfwood is ultimately better for, unfortunately, having died without, you know, taking his father figure's life or whatever. And, Wolf, it's okay, so Wolfwood's death causes a good thing because his father figure is taken out by Legato in a way that eventually comes back around to Vash using Wolfwood's weapon to defeat Knives. Like, it's all just very, like, yeah, it, in the short term, you could get killed for it or bad things could happen to you, but, like, it is important to uphold principles because if you don't, like, nothing will, and things will only get worse.
Which I thought was a nice message, and that's the message of the film, which I feel it basically sums up what's good about Trigun. The other, and this I cannot overstate how important this is to me, but I am shallow. The movie realizes and articulates Naitao's vision for this series aesthetically in the way the TV show does not even come close to. So you're watching the movie and you're like, oh, this is supposed to look like this? Holy shit, this looks amazing. Like, the cities are populated, they're diverse, they're colorful, everything is fully animated, it looks beautiful. Like, they really bring Naitao's crazy-ass designs to life, and they do it in a really nice way. There's a bunch of awkward CG in it, but it's all vehicles, so it pretty much looks okay for most of the time. But, it, you know, for what I want out of Trigun, which is you want the aesthetic, I cannot undersell how important the aesthetic of Trigun is to its success. Mm-hmm. The show generally owes its success to Vash's character design and the setting. Mm-hmm. The movie brings that to life in a way the TV show looks. The TV show just looks like pencil scribblings on notebook paper compared to the movie.
Right.
And to me, that's a really big, important part of this. So if I'm going to, like, immerse myself in the planet Gunsmoke, the movie is the way to do it because it really shows you what it's, oh, it's supposed to look like this. It's widescreen. There's a million characters on screen at all times. The cities are all packed and bustling with life. Mm-hmm. There's neon and color and gradients, and they're using all kinds of color in there to just really make it pop, mm-hmm. instead of the TV show, which is this ugly brown mess. Mm-hmm. That was incredibly important to me, and it really brought, like, the four to me. It's like, oh, this is what Trigon's supposed to look like. And thematically, it does the only thing I thought was particularly interesting thematically in the show. So for me, the movie is it. Well, you could just watch the movie. It's an hour and a half. You'll be fine.
I disagree because I agree with you that the movie is really pretty. And I think when I reviewed it for the site, I was like, okay, I'm happy that this is pretty and it looks like what the world was always supposed to look like. Although if I would be way more forgiving of the movie if they had taken the opportunity. I know, like, it's supposed to be... It's weird, because they're trying to play to fans. You're not going to enjoy this movie unless you're familiar with the universe anyway. But, like, at the same time, they don't put anything that fans would really, like, be salivating for. It's basically, like, an extra episode of the first half of the TV show. But they don't put anything that the fans might be salivating for, which is draw the fucking alien shit. Like, we want to see the alien things, the plants.
Well,
like,
that's what you want. More. I don't want that.
Well, okay, well... People who really like Trigon want to see that because that was the thing that was largely missing, along with the Western aesthetic is great. That needs to be there. It doesn't need to overtake the plant stuff, but just like a 2-minute scene, just show us the thing. And so they don't have that, A. It's all the Western, like, it's all like first half of the show, extremely basic stuff. And then B, like, the story sucks. It does. It's like a not as good as I would say it's not as good as most of the episodes in the first half.
Oh, I so disagree. That is so wrong.
It's okay.
You could cut it in half.
It is okay, but it's largely just a big lump of cliches and shruggo.
You could cut that movie in half and it would fit in with those early episodes so well you wouldn't even notice.
I agree, but
like that is how much it fits in with that. So if you're defending that first half material, I don't think you can attack the movie for being like that because it totally belongs
in
there.
No, but it would be lesser. It wouldn't be as good as Lost July or the Sand Steamer episodes. Or
those were plot episodes, though. Those episodes
the Frank
had
Marlin
plot
one,
stuff.
The Frank Marlin one, the Sand Steamer one is episodic. The Frank Marlin one is episodic, too, and I think it's better than that. Just generally speaking, like, it was okay. It was fine. It's just, to me, it was like, oh, jump movie. And yeah, I didn't like the characterization as much. I thought they took that. Yosuke Kuroda, I think, put a lot of... If you've seen the manga is very good to, like, women characters. Like, it's very good to them. And while I don't mind the Meryl and Millie being turned into more Slayers comedy women, like, I don't mind that, he jammed a lot of really gross, weird, sexist stuff into the anime, and it's worse in the movie, where she's like, they almost rape her on screen, and it's like,
there's a couple of uncomfortable moments in the film regarding that stuff. The worst is not, I mean, okay, like, it's an action movie with a 90s sensibility. The threat to the female character is rape. Yeah, that sucks. I wish they didn't do that, but whatever, it doesn't offend me or anything. The thing that kind of bothered me is that there's a scene, like, the main character, the new female lead, whose name I don't remember, so this is how much of an impact this film had on me. She goes on and on about how she doesn't want to be touched. She doesn't want to be touched by anybody because it gives her goosebumps or something, like a rash. There's a scene where Vash is following her and irritating her, and he won't stop following her, and he keeps touching her. So he'll keep putting his hands on her and, like, sliding his hand up her neck and, like, up her leg and stuff. And she's like, oh, stop, and it's played for laughs. Vash is sexually assaulting her.
Yeah.
It's not funny. It's really out of character, and it makes you dislike him. It's a couple of seconds. It doesn't ruin the movie for me or anything, but it's tonally just a giant fucking whiff, like a face plant, and I don't know why it's in there.
And it's out of character for the TV show, which already perved him up more anyway.
Yeah, it's true.
And
the TV show perved him up.
So to compare, like, so the Dominique the Cyclops fight, episode 14, where he fights one of the gung-ho, the only gung-ho gun who is a woman. In the manga... there is a moment where her introduction, she knocks three buttons off of his coat and she said, if I wanted to, I could have killed you three times or whatever. And three buttons pop off of his coat or whatever. And he said, oh yeah, well, if I wanted to, I could have groped you five times, and five buttons pop off her shirt. And then it's revealed that she's a woman. Cause she has sort of a neutral face. You can't really tell. And then, when her buttons pop open, you can see there's a bust there or whatever. And that's it. That's in the manga, but that's it.
In the anime too.
in the anime, they take it farther. He makes horrible sexist jokes about her, and then she runs after he defeats her. She runs away blushing, like, "Oh my goodness!" And it's like, "Ew, no, that's terrible." And in the manga, like, none of that happens. They fight. He beats her, and then she commits suicide. And there's no sexist jokes. I don't understand.
We should clarify, Trigun is not really a series to be discussed.
No, it's
when
not,
it comes to sexism, because
gross.
The show is not commenting on gender.
I literally bring it up because the movie.
Yeah, because the movie made it gross. Like, there's a few weird, tonally off, gross moments that I'm pretty sure are unique to the anime and the movie. And the movie takes it a step further, and I was kind of surprised to see that, because generally you don't want your lovable, nice guy, goof hero also be rapey and creepy. Like, you don't want that. And there's moments of that, and it's totally off-putting. But it's a minor thing. It doesn't really impact the overall
thing.
Yeah,
it is really small compared to most of what's going on.
But, anyway, Jeff, what did you think of the film?
If I could put my opinion on particularly that part, I think one of the reasons why I didn't like the movie as much as the TV series is that in the TV series, when Vash did do something stupid every now and then, it would be because he meant to do that. Whether it be, dancing into the saloon and getting involved in a hostage situation. He was dumb, but he did that for a reason. And when you brought up that scene in the movie, he was dumb, but it didn't seem like it had a reason to be there. Mm-hmm. Like, he's touching her, and she's getting hives all over her arms. So, okay, how does that further, Vash's reason for doing it? It didn't seem like it had one.
Right.
And so in the end, when I watched this movie, I enjoyed it as an action movie. There was a lot of gunfighting at the end, and that's something that I'll have to admit. I sat down. I'm like, I really like this. I like what they're doing with this final climactic scene. But to work up there, I didn't really get the sense that you didn't need to have Marilyn Millie there. They were practically tertiary characters, not even secondary.
Yeah, they're supposed to be like secondary, and the movie, they show up. I think
the only reason they're there is so that they can discover Vash after he had apparently been sucked into a quicksand pit or something like that. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I'm like, you could have taken Spike and Jet from Cowboy Bebop, thrown them in the same situation. It would have been the same movie. I didn't like the sense that they were trying to make it a Trigun movie. But it really had no Trigun to it. It was just a Western.
Yeah, okay, so I think that's what I wrote in my review for the site. Like, all of Trigun, the things that made Trigun more interesting than just the premise seemed to be stripped out, almost to, like, continuity error issues, because Wolfwood's character is weird in that movie. He should, at this point, now, it's a secret, like, they don't want it, they leave it out because I think that they want to, They leave it out because I think that they want to make it more accessible or whatever, but this is for fans. Only the fans are watching it. Leave it in. Wolfwood acts like he thinks that Vash has died at one point, and it's like, by this point, he should already be working for Knives. He knows who and what Vash is. His reaction to this, his thinking that he's dead, makes no sense. All of his behavior in the movie makes no sense. He's operating like he's written as the Wolfwood that we think he is at some other point in the series, as if he was really that person, but he's not anymore. It isn't. And Vash is weird and different, and everybody is just sort of bleh. It's like a jump movie. It barely feels like it connects to the spirit of the show to me.
Wolfwood's in the movie because they wanted this one shot that's this fucking awesome shot where he's just finished firing his big stupid cross gun. Mm-hmm. And the camera is holding on a profile shot. He's holding the gun. It goes to a two-thirds front shot, pans around him, and there's parallax between him and the smoke in front of him. It's a beautiful shot. It's the entire reason why he's in the movie. It's just that shot, because they just wanted, because these character designs are so attractive, they just want to show him off and have, this beautiful animation. Like, to me, the difference between the TV show and the movie is like The Wizard of Oz. Like, the beginning of The Wizard of Oz, and then when she gets there, right. And suddenly it's widescreen, it's in color. Like, that's the movie,
you're
right?
It's very beautiful, but the story bothered me. Like, I
was fine with it because I didn't care about the story. Like, I had such a hard time giving a shit about the story in Dragon to begin with. Mm-hmm. You're like, well, Wolfwood's not like his character. He's barely a fucking character. He's barely there.
That's not true.
He's barely
Wolfwood existed. Is a great character. Wolfwood's a wonderful character.
I've stepped into husbando territory here, so. I do
genuinely believe that, but that would be like extra time off the podcast. Gotta get to Twitter questions.
I felt like the characters were threadbare excuses for a rhetorical argument. You obviously very strongly disagree with that.
Very strongly disagree.
And that's fine. And I accept that. I understand I'm the outlier on this one, but. Jeff, it sounds like you share basically Hope's opinion that the movie is a lesser... you're glad it exists because it's pretty, but it is a lesser work.
It was basically what I expected. I mean, I'm going back to, you know, things like Cowboy Bebop and even the Full Metal Alchemist movies, that basically it's just there to bring the band back together.
Mm-hmm. Right, you know, except this was 10 years or so, 12 years after the fact.
Right, and like, if this was 2004, 2005 that they made this movie, then definitely you would have seen a Trigun Maximum TV show. I have no doubt about it. But when you sit on it, you wait. When they finally came out, and the fandom was dead, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. The fandom's dead. You know, you still see Vash coats at conventions, but yeah, it's dead. It's dead and gone.
But in terms of Japan in general, I mean, you need to keep people interested. You need to keep feeding that fire for people to want to watch it.
Yeah.
If you wait 15 years to show something else, you're going to have to hope it's a show like a Hunter Hunter. Mm-hmm. You can't depend on its... momentum in other places and hope that you can catch fire. It would have been great if they did a movie maybe that was like a review of the TV show and then a movie that was maybe a wrap-up of the manga. That would have been great.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. You know, the show spends so much time in the episodic stuff, and it's clearly like what made a lot of people fans of that show. So I'm torn. Like, but then again, it's easy for me to say all this stuff because I have no emotional attachment to any of this.
Right.
It's just like, well, this seems like it would fit in there just fine. So what's the bitching about? But the bitching is that they didn't give you what you wanted. And that's on them. That's on them for misreading the audience. It's very easy to see what they were going for, but it is a whiff. It's a misfire.
Yeah.
That movie could have brought Trigun back from the dead, and it didn't. Mm. So something
I think
wrong.
This is pretty much an art versus poetry type of argument where is it beautiful or is it, you know, does it tug at the heartstrings?
Yeah, right. It certainly didn't do that, but no. Neither did the show in my experience.
So. Okay, so the only thing I want to say about Wolfwood.
Yeah, please, go
only
ahead.
Thing. Okay, so I think Wolfwood is a great character. Most of his stuff is like you have to read between the lines. Like, having seen the show multiple times, like stuff that he says in retrospect when you know that you don't realize that he's a traitor, or they don't straight up say that he's a traitor until the episode where he dies. So if you go back and watch the show knowing that he's a traitor, it's like, oh, like it changes a lot of how he acts and you feel really bad for him. But what I wanted to say is Wolfwood's death scene, having seen a lot of dramatic death scenes in like anime and movies and stuff like that, I think Wolfwood's death scene really holds up as a like shockingly vulnerable, especially for a superhero thing, guy who makes a heroic sacrifice, like a really shockingly vulnerable way to do that. They could have had him go out like, well, at least I went out doing the right thing or whatever, or I'm at peace in death because, you know, I did the right thing or whatever, and Vash can do it or whatever. But his last thoughts are, oh shit, I've made a terrible mistake, I don't want to die. And it's, you get the piece first. Like, he starts with the piece, but then he just starts losing it. And his last words are like, I can't stand this, it's not fair. And I think that was especially combined with the music, which is this extremely, like, quiet little hallelujah thing by this sort of dude in the background with a couple guitar chords. And it's like, like, it's really hard to watch because it's, I felt like that was a large part of why I feel the show is very human. Instead of being like high-minded ideals and superheroes, it's very vulnerable because, you know, the way that they showed this guy dying was not heroic sacrifice. It wasn't high-minded ideals. It was just like, He's just a guy who made a mistake, and then he, you know, ultimately doing the right thing paid off for everybody around him, but for him, like, it was the end and it wasn't fair, and he wasn't happy about it. And I was like, you know, that's rough, like, that fucking sucks, you know? And then they cut directly from that to Millie, like, screaming, bawling. Like, it's not even just quiet sadness, she is screaming in both the dub and the Japanese, and it's like... like it's rough. Like that was hard. So yeah, emotionally that show is candy to me. I thought it really worked. But yeah.
Well, it's a good scene.
It wasn't one of those heroic scenes either, where if someone gets shot, then his partner's right there to say, "No, you're going to make it," or even, you know, just being there with them. The fact that this was sort of a soliloquy of sorts, where really his only conversation was with himself. Maybe if you want to look at it in a religious sense, it was with his maker.
He's talking to God. I think he is a true believer.
That was his only ever confession that he had ever said, made. And actually watching it with the Japanese, I actually got quite a bit more of the emotion with that.
And yeah, it's better in the Japanese.
Yeah. I mean, even with him speaking in the Osaka dialect, he had sort of this, not only the soothing voice to him at times, but also this panic voice to him. And that scene just really grabbed me in terms of, you know, this is probably one of the best death scenes that I've ever seen in an anime.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, is I think it's one of the best death scenes I've ever seen in any kind of anime thing. Like, it's just raw, very honest.
I would even compare it to maybe, and I'm going a little far with this, but maybe like Dog of Flanders. Ooh. Maybe that sort of death scene type of, you know, boy, it got me. I rarely cry, and I swear to God, I cried when I saw this.
Yeah, I almost cried. I cried when I first saw it as a kid. Now, it's much harder to make me cry, but I came real close revisiting for the podcast, because it's like, okay, fan self, I'm going to be okay. It's okay. It's just a show. It's not really dead. Yeah.
All right. Let's go ahead and get to some of these Twitter questions. We got a few.
All right.
The Subtle Doctor asks, did the series tonal shift work for you? Why or why not? I mean, obviously my answer is no, and it's because the whole show is already a big sloppy mess to begin with, so that's my answer. What do you think, Hope?
I cringed a lot, even at age 14. I cringed, especially episode 15, 16, those, I cringed a good deal, but it ultimately worked for me, and I think... The episodes from the sand, from the floating ship to the end, which is like 20 to 26, I think are still like tonally consistent for the most part. So, but yeah, it didn't. It was rocky. It was uncomfortable. It was, this doesn't work great, even if you're 14 years old. But ultimately, it worked. Yes.
Yeah, I like the tonal shift mainly because I was a little older while I was watching it, and I wanted sort of that shift in gear. I had always seen the show in the first few episodes as being sort of a combat between isms, you know, pacifism versus conservatism, things like, but as you got closer to the end, you started to see that pacifism versus nihilism, that pacifism versus tribalism.
I guess pragmatism would be Wolfwood.
Definitely. I had that written down for him.
Act fast, act best.
Like a vigilante sort of approach to things. But that, I mean, as it got into deeper and darker isms, I like that change. I'm just someone that I need to see something that will give me a bitter taste in my mouth, so that would get me to remember it. And I'll have to admit, looking at the characters that came through, you might not see them as being memorable, but as they came through and they got disposed of like toilet paper to Legato and Knives, it got that bile in my stomach, and I hated Legato and Knives so much that I loved the show. And so that tonal shift absolutely does it for me.
Okay. Let's see. Mog Ever Living asks, in Hope's retrospective, she mentions Knives manipulating the spaceship crew, but doesn't state what he does. What did he do?
Well, in the anime, he can't control humans. Legato can do that. Knives can't do that. It's lame. I don't really like what the anime did with it, but he just gives a talking to the girl and gives a different talking to the guy, and creates a misunderstanding that will cause the guy to shoot the woman. And that's what he does. So it's not that complicated. And then in the end, like, he just shoots the captain in the head and releases the virus in the computer system, and that's it. Like, it's nothing supernatural. He's just a smooth talker.
He basically took their sins and sort of pitted them against them.
Yeah, he tried to get
them. He didn't do anything that was already done before. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they're talking about him being a monster. That's sin that's already planted in the human being. Mm-hmm. He just found a way to say, I'm going to take that sin and turn it in on you guys.
Well, one of my favorite bits from that is where he turns the captain's, specifically before shooting the captain in the head, he uses his own words. Where the captain once told, he's like, well, it seems like you guys really fucked up the earth. And the captain says, well, we did the best we could. Made the best decision we could under the circumstances. And then the captain does the same thing. The captain has a Wolfwood outlook on life. The captain does the same thing when sacrificing the crew member to flushing them in space. And he said, well, I don't know. What, did I make the right decision? I don't know. And he said, well, you're only human. You made the best decision you could, but because you're human, you can make mistakes. He says, but guess what? I don't. And then he shoots him. And it's like, he's like, I'm perfect. And, you know, I'll just get rid of you. And it's like, oh, what an asshole, you know, what an evil 9-year-old or whatever. I guess he's 2 at the time. What an evil 2-year-old, you know.
All right. The Maraximers asks, favorite episode? Anybody have one? Hope?
I always like the Sand Steamer episodes a lot. I mean, like, stuff near the end, but that all relies on the buildup from the rest. So just standalone, the Sand Steamer episodes. So.
All right. Jeff?
Standalone, I'd have to say episode 5, maybe, when they were going up against the Nebraska family. That first episode where he finally fired his gun. It sort of, it definitely shifted the feeling that he wasn't just this idiotic fool, foolhardy guy with a, you know, with a don't shoot anything mentality, but into someone who sort of had this feeling that he knew how to use his surroundings. So I think episode 5, and of course, episode 24, the Legato, his death scene, that really hit me hard because it was just so fraught with tension at the end.
Right. Yeah, I think I agree with you on that one. I think if I had to pick an episode of the show, it would be that one. The episode where he kills Legato. But yeah, I mean, my favorite episode is the movie. So, okay. Twice Lost asks, a little off topic, but what did you think of that Trigun Cowboy Bebop anime music video? So there's a very famous anime music video that was done. I was there for the premiere of this at Anime Expo, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure it premiered there. Where some guy with some very advanced video editing tools for the year 2000, cut a fight between Spike and Vash, and what is it called?
Tainted Donuts.
God damn it!
That's a terrible title.
Jesus is terrible. The video itself is fine. It's whatever. It's fan bait. It's just like make the AMV crowd yell, like make them just fucking wet themselves. And I was there for that, and they definitely wet themselves. It had the effect that guy was going for. It was the biggest fucking thing, and if you went to any anime music video competition for a decade after that, you probably saw that video. Guy was talented for the time. I mean, that was tough on equipment from back then. Mm-hmm. It's not like the easiest thing in the world now to distinct pieces of animation together like that. But it was a lot harder back then.
I do like that video principally because it's actually very it's very on spot to what would actually, quote unquote, what would really happen.
This is what would really happen.
No, I mean, like, there's no such thing, but it is
in
very,
reality.
It is very in character. Somehow he got it like really in character as to how that would go down. Like everybody acts really in character, and at the end he gets caught because Faye punches him in the face, and he willingly goes with her back to the cell or whatever. And it, you know, it's like. Yeah, that's probably what would happen. Like, that was cute.
You liked it because it wasn't too OOC for you.
No, I mean, I remember that video. Like, you know, usually crossovers or whatever, you forget it. But I remember that one because it was like, this is actually pretty close to what would happen. So, I mean, in character.
Okay. Christina Skiles asks, Why does the show seem to have a bigger impact on Western audiences rather than the Japanese audience? Well, I think it just has a very Western sensibility. Naito has a Western sensibility to him.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty straightforward, and the aesthetic is stuff that is popular with Westerners.
Yep.
Remember, this is the age of sunglasses and big coats. This is a year before The Matrix. That was the style at that time. That was popular then. I had a roommate in college who had a big fucking duster and stupid Matrix glasses, and he loved Trigun.
God.
And that was the style at the time. So it hit in the West because it was right place, right time. And obviously American audiences, even if we don't necessarily show up for them at the box office as much as we used to, the Western is still a genre that's going to do better here than it is elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very Western sensibility kind of a show.
And his point of view, his especially looking at the manga, like his point of view, his perspective, both in drama and comedy, is just way more Western. Like this guy, if you look at any of his oeuvre or any of his interviews, like he is a weeb for America. Like the amount of like even fringe action movies that he's watched and like stuff. Like this is a guy who imported My Name Is Bruce, I believe. Like, he's extremely, like, he just, and like, I think the chapter, the or one of the earliest chapters of Trigun is, most of them are titled after action movies, one of them is titled Looney Tunes, and it has that huge sense of humor, and it's like, yeah, that's just his thing, like, he's a huge American weeb, so of course Americans are gonna resonate with his stuff more, like.
I should point out, I really liked the episode titles, I thought they were great. Mm-hmm. I loved the title cards, that really simple title card with that kind of burned-in looking font. Mm-hmm. It's neat. So it looks old. I liked it.
Yeah, and the guitar sting there with every time it came up was like.
Yeah. That's
good. In terms of getting back to the why was it more popular over here than in Japan? I think, to tell the truth, it was probably a bunch of factors. I have my theories about it, but I mean, for one thing, you have what was running at the same time as Trigun. You had Roni Kenshin was wrapping up, and it had basically the same idea of pacifism in a very violent society, a very changeable society. And then you had things that were a little bit more, I think, visually stimulating. You know, Utena had just finished up the year before, and Cowboy Bebop, even though it had taken a hiatus and got pushed to another network later on, it still had, I think, a little bit more attachment to Japan. You know, the jazz portion of Japan is something that's embraced by a lot of people. The whole image of sipping whiskey while listening to a piano going on, it's a little bit more appealing than sipping bourbon in a dusty saloon with tumbleweeds moving up outside. It's something that I don't think attached to, and it's something that we attach to because we have the knowledge of these types of scenarios.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so you mentioned the title cards. Just wanted to say, this is another bit of trivia that was lost to time because it was in that interview. It's really interesting. The last episode of the show is called Underneath the Sky So Blue, which kind of has almost nothing to do with that episode. I mean, except that they're under a blue sky. The reason that is the title is because they were so rushed to change stuff at the end. Originally, at the end of Trigun, the ships from Earth were supposed to show up. That was going to be like the coda. It was like, they're back, we're saved. You know, and it was like, it was all worth it because they're back, we're saved. And the title was Underneath the Sky So White. Because this was changed almost at the last second, they didn't even bother to think up a new episode title. They just said, change the color of the sky because the ships ain't showing up. Like, he's just going to beat knives. We can't animate the ships. So, yeah. There you go.
A lot of trivia about that show. It's fascinating.
I was obsessed.
It really helps.
Yeah.
Okay, Greatest G asks, which do you prefer? The anime's poor budget, or the manga's sometimes incomprehensible art and panel layout? I guess both versions are kind of jank in their own way.
I looked at the manga right before, like I revisited it, and it's actually more comprehensible than I remember. It's just, you gotta stare at things for a minute sometimes.
Right, yeah.
But it's, so I have to barely say I prefer the manga's panel layout confusion to the crappy art of the anime. Doesn't mean I always prefer what the story developments are. Like, it's half and half. Sometimes the manga has way better story choices. Sometimes the anime does. It depends. But, yeah, I mean, if you stare at those panels for just 2 seconds longer than you do a normal normal panel, you can figure it out. It's just a little busy.
I played the fifth. I've never actually read the manga, so frankly, after watching the anime, I still don't really have a desire to read the manga. So
it's the same story beats. It's just going to be bigger and crazier, but it's the same story beats. So,
all right. Plushy1A asks, did you feel that Wolfwood's backstory was too ambiguous and that knowing more would have helped contrast him with Vash? I think so.
Yeah.
I think that would have helped a lot. In fact, if the show had spent more time building up these characters and fleshing out their backstories a little bit, the supporting cast, it would have turned them into stronger characters for me. It would have made them feel less like just supporting arguments in this rhetorical debate that's happening in the show, which is what Wolfwood felt like to me. It felt like he was there to represent a viewpoint. Mm-hmm.
Maybe presented a little bit more of him in some of the other episodes. I'm someone who's honestly, I hate the flashback, but if maybe just to have him in sort of a moment of smoking his cigarette and thinking back on his own past, I would have liked to see that scattered in there. Having one episode where it's, okay, this is what he's like, this is what he's like, this is what happens, this is how he dies. Mm-hmm. I didn't like that, mainly because you could separate that from the rest of the series and it would make Wolfwood so much less of a person to get into. Yeah, I would have liked a little bit more of his detail splashed here and there.
Yeah, the anime tells you Child Assassin is taught make the best choice you can with a split second. Making a fast choice that might be wrong is better than no choice at all. Like, that's his philosophy. That's basically what it tells you. And that he is a ringer who has to be a ringer or else his orphanage will be destroyed. And he's working for his the only father figure he's ever known. That's what the anime tells you. And that's it. And it's like, I think it's enough. I think it's enough to where it's really sad and you feel for him. But yeah, definitely. I mean, almost every character could have used more backstory in the anime. They're very quick and fast and bare minimum with a lot of stuff. So if anybody is curious, the really bare bones thing about Wolfwood that makes him a foil to Vash is that when he talks about protecting the orphanage back home, they are not orphans that he rescued and he is like, he looks like he's 35. He is one of the orphans. He's actually, like Vash, he is actually a kid on the inside, except for him it's literal because he's human, but he is all muscular and able to lift that big gun and has like slightly better reflexes and senses than normal people because he took like super drug made out of plants that like gives him all that stuff, but it like makes him age really fast.
Isn't he something like 19 in the manga?
No, he's like 14, 15. He's a kid. He's a kid, which makes that thing with Millie really uncomfortable, BTW. But, you know, he doesn't fuck her in the manga. He fucks her in the anime. But, like, so that's the thing about Wolfwood is that's why his philosophy means so much to him. Like, act fast. You don't have much time. Like, his whole thing is you never have enough time. I lost my childhood. I want to protect innocence. I value innocence. If you are a bad person, if you've given up that innocence, I can't help you. I might shoot you in the face. It's just what happens.
So, kids don't smoke cigarettes, whatever you do.
Yeah, well, yeah. So there you go. That's the short version. That's pretty much the difference with the manga, if you ever wanted to know without reading it.
Okay. All right. Well, that actually wraps us up. It was a lively discussion. Jeff, thank you so much for coming by and sharing in this with us.
Is this the part where I cross my fingers and yell love and peace really loud?
Boy, they really tried to make that a thing, and they did.
It was at a lot of cons. It got annoying.
Yeah.
I'll have to say this. I loved Vash's voice actor in Japan, that's for sure.
Okay.
But anyways, I can't stress enough, if you do want an emotional story, definitely watch it. If you're an art guy like Zach, then don't watch it.
Watch the movie. That's it.
Depends on who you are. Like, you know, the worst thing that can happen is you watch and it doesn't work for you. But the best thing can happen is you watch it and you become an obsessive weirdo like me.
Yeah, all right. Okay, all right. Thanks a lot, Jeff. Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Jeff for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating, a review. We'd love it. And we'll see you all next week.